like to welcome Walter Gornick to give the next presentation. Walt is the Director of the Office of Science and Technical Information and Department of Energy. Presentation for us this afternoon is continuing to extend the theme of open innovation, and he'll be talking about open innovation enabled by Global Federation on Science and Technical Knowledge. Please welcome Walt.
Thank you, Susan. As Susan said, I'm Director of the Office of Scientific and Technical Information of the Department of Energy. And essentially what that means is we do the technical information operations, scientific and technical information operations for the Department of Energy. We gather up the R&D results from the entire agency, mostly the civilian side and the military side, and we try to put models out of that which is shareable as we can. Sharing with trading and other agencies and other countries, and just generally getting the project is the view, attention, and praise. Just another word about the organization. Our mission is to advance science and sustain technological creativity by making R&D findings available and useful to Department of Energy researchers and the public as well. I think that every time that agrees that science advances, it's only a challenge to share. And it's probably stated most eloquently by Isaac Newton over 300 years ago, who said, if I have seen further, it's only by standing on the shoulders of giants. Yeah, we have taken that thought one step further. Sharing of knowledge is accelerated, and discovery is accelerated too. And for those of us in the information business, this is a very important concept. It means that we can do our jobs better and faster, share more, and science itself will advance. And therefore, the benefits can accrue to humankind and become in time to advance growth and solve the problem. That's really motivation. Getting back to the theme of the workshop here, how do we help researchers find information for making life-altering discoveries? This is a cloud diagram of various disciplines in science. And I think it's very appropriate to put in a wonderful quote from one of Heisenberg. It is probably true quite generally and the history of human thinking and fruitful development frequently take place at those points where two different lines of thought meet. So what we have here is cloud diagram are different lines of thought. And so we want to get those types of thoughts to have better basis for places where they meet. And what we try to do is from energy in my office, we try to make it possible for people in any one of these areas, learn what's going on anywhere around the world or anybody else. Therefore, once you've identified and discovered these other people, then that's the first step in doing collaboration, innovation, and making new discoveries as one time you moved out for us many years ago. But before we get into this very far, I need to dispel the common notion, I'm not sure how prevalent it is here in this room, but certainly schools and up in college, some of the prevalent schools like schools in Monaco are already doing information discovery jobs. It's simply a fallacy that the majority of science information in industry, which is a non-Googleable part of the web, if you will, for popular search engines simply cannot go. That's a technological issue. The way these Google and Yahoo work, they have a crawler, the business website, they follow the link, and then burrow down, they get index in these pages and business, and make a composite index so that when you are actually doing a search on Google or Yahoo, you are actually doing a search of their composite index. Well, it so happens that much of the world's information, including that science, is in databases. And databases, there's a front page of the database, often you provide a search trigger. But there's no link to the components of the database. So there's nothing for the the caller from Yahoo or Google or anybody else's caller to follow. So the fossil world gets to stay are not Google for that reason. Now, DNA owners can take certain steps to expose that information to the Google crawler and Yahoo crawler. We've certainly done that in the Park of Energy. A lot of folks don't, for one reason or another, shy into huge quantity of information, including great science information, which is not Googleable. So, we in the Park of Energy in the information business recognize that gap between availability and need, and we're seizing opportunities to fix it. Another concept I think is very important to me to address is we need to recognize that the web is still a very, very young technology. I make an analogy here to another transformational technology from a century ago, which is the automobile. In this 1903, that was the first mass-produced Ford. And 15 years later, from 1918, we had a lot of progress. We had fenders, we had roofs, we had doors that opened, all kinds of strange things. And there were all kinds of other innovations under the hood, as you can see in this picture. The point is that there's tremendous technological advance between 1903 and 1918. It's spanned about 15 years. Now, if you accept the notion that we spoke about this morning, that the web came along and actually boom was an inventor about that year, but it started moving in 1995, 15 years ago. So we have gone down the trail of developing the web about 15 years, about the same amount of time between 1903 and 1984. But we know from our own common day, everyday experience, that time does not stop in 1918. The technology for all of you continues to evolve, and evolve, and yet continues to evolve today, and will continue to evolve tomorrow. The web is the same way. We don't know what this web is going to look like 5 years from now. At least I can't know. But I know this, it won't be what we have today. And I think this is one of the main drivers for having innovation in the web in the business of so much of the information that is on the web and is not Googleable. That needs to be addressed. We've developed one technology for addressing part of that problem. I'm not going to pretend it's the solution or the best solution, but it's one available to us. We've developed this as technology, and it's working, and I'm going to show it to you. Just share it with you now. So, the upshot is that today, Google is capitalizing on the early era of the web technology. And there's no denying that Google is hugely successful in powerful in the hand of the world's searches. But we must remember that we're just at the beginning of this transformation. Further technological transformations may very well eclipse today's search technology. And the new technology that we're going to tell you about here is we call federated search. And it's sometimes called meta search, some other name, very certain things involving it. It's a term that you can look up on Wikipedia. Okay, here's how federated search works. It drills down into databases that's what the algorithms are Google. It does a number of steps. And the first step is you come to a federated search product, a tool. I'm going to tell you about Worldwide Science in a minute, science.gov, some others as well. We put in a query just as if it was a Google search engine. So the first page will say to you with Google. But when you press the search button, everything changes. Now, on a federated search application, the query then travels to a server which hosts the federated search application. In my case, those servers are located in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. In Oak Ridge, the query is then replicated multiple times, 51 times, in this case, worldwide size, and then out to servers around the world which have a host databases that have information that you would well see. And each of those servers, in terms of executing real time. Now, once that results come back from that server, it's going to come back over to Tennessee, where they are sorted and presented back to you in raw and trained order. as an awful lot. So your prayer actually travels from wherever your PC is to Oak Ridge, travels all the way around the world with the database, comes back to Oak Ridge, and it's sorted. Now, it takes a few seconds. The first results will come back in a few seconds. The last results will probably be 20, 25 seconds. Here's a few of the other Federated Service applications. I won't follow my worldwide clock in particular, but the one that the application that we as Department of Energy use for our own tools, our own technical reports, our own e-prints, our own project summaries, our own conference proceedings is called Science Accelerator. And it just puts it's scienceaccelerator.gov.org. And what we've done is take Science Accelerator, which is a composite of all the RD results that DOE has, and we contribute them to science.gov, which is the interagency federated search pool orchestrated by an interagency organization called CENDI. George is until recently was a the entire National Science Foundation representative who's sending to not in the Department of Energy representative who's sending. Science.gov has the R&D results of the R&D programs representing 98% of the federal R&D budget. So it's 14 U.S. science agencies, about 200 million pages of science information. Okay, but we got the United States R&D information under control. Now what? Well, let's go worldwide. What's the first call right in the United States? So we developed something called worldwidescience.org. So the science.gov is the U.S. contribution to worldwidescience.org. And by the way, all these are up, all free. You can check it out. We've got a laptop and you can do it right now. The Worldwide Science adds to science.gov the R&D results from 60 other nations. So when you do a query on worldwidescience.org, you're actually searching the best R&D results from published by 61 nations, including the United States. About 400 million pages altogether, which is we estimated roughly on the same order of magnitude as the science that's available by Google, but this is all put up by a government who thought it was worthy of publishing as opposed to where the non-government information comes from. I'd say there's a lot of excellent science on the government side, too, though. It's right. It's up to you to figure out which it is. So, through federated search, we ensure access to non-usable science. By the way, our studies indicate that about 3.5% of the information worldwide science is, in fact, usable. We're at the state that 96.5% of the content between worldwide science and food. Just to give you a little background on worldwide science, and the concept that I proposed in 2006 at a meeting of the International Council for Scientific and Technical Information, which happened here in Bethesda, Maryland. The representative from the British Libraries in the audience took it back. It struck a very responsive chord that Lynn Brindley, who was the chief executive officer for the British Library in London, through that connection, there was a partnership established between the Department of Energy and the British Library to develop worldwide science. So working collaboratively, we had developed worldwidescience.org. We did a demo in 2007. We did a later in 2007. And in June 2008, we launched an international governing body called the Worldwide Science Alliance. So right now, the chair of the Worldwide Science Alliance is Richard Boulderstone from the British Library. The deputy chair is Ken Bjornstad, who runs the Canadian Institute for Scientific and Technical Information. And OSCE is the operating agency. So in search of 61 databases in 61 countries, now That's a coincidence. Some of the databases represent more than one country. Some countries have more than one database. You still have to have 61 databases of 51 countries. And then, of course, these countries are the most populous countries and the countries that have the most sophisticated science programs, except for one, and that's in Russia. And I'll explain that in a second. So, as a foreign linguistics lifestyle, I mentioned much of this is gray literature, report literature, bibliographic information from scientific literature, scientific journals. There's nothing in it that requires payment, but it does link to places that do require payment, like this in the scientific journals. For example, PubMed is part of worldwide.org. PubMed bibliographic is linked to full text, but you've got to have a subscription. You don't see the journal article on PubMed. By the way, PubMed Central is also part of worldwide.org. There's a bibliographic database the British Library has, which I think is probably better than anything we have in the United States with the physical science. It would not out enough deal in the United States for bibliographic searches and the physical sciences of journal literature. They call it the electronic table of contents, which is also part of worldwide science. Well, so where are we going from here? Right now there's a requirement that the database has to be at English titles and English abstracts. And the queries must also be in English. Now, as we mentioned here in a previous presentation, English is the dominant language in science, but there are a lot of people who don't speak English. So in order to broaden this pool's applicability, we have investigated multilingual translations. And we developed a prototype which works well, that for the speaker of any other language can query worldwide signs, get back hints that are translated back into their language. And speakers of English are soon going to be able to search databases in foreign languages and get back hints in English. We're working closely with Microsoft. We're using Microsoft technology to make this happen. Machine translation is a huge area. It's been an intensive application for actually several decades. And in my judgment, it's been really rapidly maturing. And we're jumping on to take early advantage of it. So we are going to launch a multilingual worldwide science at the ICTI meeting, the International Council for Scientific and Technical Information, in Helsinki, Finland, in June. So therefore, a scientist in the United States will be able to find the works of scientists in the same field from 60 other countries, all in a single search. They can do that right now in English, doing what they're doing in most any other language. It also has a alert feature, so that you don't have to go back and search worldwide science over and over again. You get an alert feature. You get email once a week. This is what's new in the entire world that meets the search criteria that you specify. Of course, the search criteria can be one word, it can be multiple words, it can be phrases with quotation marks, so it can be the exact phrase, all kinds of possibilities. It has real-time translations and non-English queries and non-English statements. Beginning in June. Now, how does this work? How does this help with networking? How does it work with help with collaboration? Well, one of the features of all worldwide science is that clusters. And one of the features that is available is author clusters. It's just a screenshot of a randomly selected search on worldwide science that you see here. And we just happen to pick Bjorn Poulsen as a researcher. We've published 15 items in worldwide science, 15 articles that are in worldwide science. And of course, then if you want to see, he's got 15 articles. Are they really what I'm interested in? Well, if you go to the bibliographic page for each one of the articles, that's what you see here. It's the one of the 15 or any one of the 15. And the point I'm making here is that for most of these articles, there is full text available. but you'll have to get what's in the article, or we don't have all the abstract, even though you use the article itself. And that's because this year, this is a full text representation of the article written by Bjorn Paulsen, the quarterly report for the research project. Once we get multilingual done, I think not. Just as I said, that the technology is going to advance, it's going to continue to advance, and this is just one milestone. I think it's another milestone. And there certainly will be other milestones. What do I think as well? My guess is that we start forging linkages or collaborations between the federated search technology, which I've been described as the crawling technology that Google and Yahoo use, so that you can get results that are both brought back together in one business. And you don't have to worry about whether it's retrieved by a federated search or by a crawling search. That should be immaterial mostly to the user. I think that in order for this to take place, though, it's going to have to rely upon the input from commercial publishers, because commercial publishers are kind of sensitive about what the government does with their material. If you can read the paper about NIH and all that, you know what I mean. So if a commercial publisher wants to take advantage of worldwide science and add that and enhance this to the different offerings they offer to the people now, well, that's fine by us. In fact, we are in discussion with one such publisher right now. So we're ready to scale up. I think that right now worldwide size is about 400 million pages. I think that's about the same as Google makes available to in terms of science. That's a published estimate to make. That's our estimate. As you put those two together, you get close to a billion pages of science research tools. They'll be available to spread ideas, increase learning, further accelerate the progress of science. Not just available to people at high-paying, high-tuition institutions or major libraries, but anywhere, anybody that has access anywhere around the world. Well, to clear what makes this information available, it's not enough. You have to also make it available very conveniently. We developed a concept we can call the cognition budget. As our cognition budget. Because what we mean by that is that there's only so much we can absorb. There's only so much of our attention. There's only so many hours a day that we learn. And then your brain, especially if you're going with me, your brain starts to get crammed up. Whether you get out of life of the last 10 first hour, an organization like that. And so you have to pay attention to how much people's time they're taking up. And how much effort is that for efficient information? So we are very, very consciously trying to make everything we do as intuitive as possible. You don't have to take a course to use anything that we produce. You just help things turn on, and there it is, sort of like a Google. So I ask you to try worldwidescience.org. There's a comment page associated with it. That's the one thing. So simply put, in summary, we intend to make more science accessible to more people, more conveniently than it's ever been done before. And this map here shows you the nations of the world who are members of worldwide science. Russia is the dominant science nation that is not part of worldwide science, the only remaining holdout, really. That's because, as far as we can tell, they don't have anything in English. And so, therefore, they don't meet our rules. But once we go multilingual June, we're going to drop that requirement, and then we are looking right now at some Russian databases to bring in. And that's about it. Yep.
Very much. I guess we'll jump right in at questions.